I am unashamed. What about you?
They can take a sheet of music, Phil. They've never heard the song, and they can just sing it without ever hearing it. And it all sounds good. So when I started singing,
Why are you there?
I'm nowhere.
Where are we at?
Why are you there? We're way back over in Genesis, right after Cain and Abel.
Phil's had a thought.
We got the children of Cain and Abel, and the human race begins. Lamech married two women, one named Adah and Zillah. And that was pre-law of Moses, of course.
Yep.
Adah gave birth to Jabal. He was the father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. Some people are good with cows. His brother's name was, are y'all listening, Jubal. This is Genesis chapter 4, for crying out loud, way back when the human race first started. Yeah. The brother of Jabal, his name was Jubal. Listen carefully. He was the father, because you said some people just seem to have the knack.
Yeah.
Jubal, he was the father of all, everybody coming from the human race, who play the harp and flute.
Really?
You say, so some individuals we've noticed, you say, it just seems like they were born with the gift, like Jace is talking about, singing, making music. Well, here's a verse way back over there that says, God made some people who are good, they are musically inclined. It's in their DNA, according to that text.
It's actually a valid point. Whether people believe in God or not, why are we always moved by music?
And by the people who are really good at it.
And who have the natural skill.
They just have
it. It's a multi-billion dollar industry.
I've seen people that can sit down at a piano and just start playing. And they hear, and then they start making music.
I have two kids.
I know, that's what I'm saying. It's just incredible.
And God would say, I did that.
Right.
I'm the one to put him out. Now, another question would be, how in the world in Genesis chapter 4, you know, at least 5,000-6,000 years before Jesus came on the earth,
right,
how in the world would someone know that?
Yeah.
How would Moses know there were people who were musically inclined and it came from Jubal? Until he wrote it down, he probably was like, whoa. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a good point.
Well, what we've tried to do is, you know, we sing, but it's a worship experience. We're worshiping a God that we believe is real. I mean, I look around at his creation and see the transformed lives of people, and I say, there's a God, and he's alive. You remember that song? We had old songbook 728B. I mean, when he said that, I think, okay, there is a God.
He is alive.
He is alive. What I was going to say is, when we practice, you know, so because I'm there, I kind of give dissertations about worship experience from a biblical view. Then my wife, I hand it over. We're a team, you know, think Priscilla and Aquila, I guess. And then she deals with anything technical about singing. But it's not just singing. We're worshiping God, and we're trying to lead the congregation. So we have a little posse that we practice. But they were singing this song. We were all going to get up there and sing. So, and it was a four-part harmony. So I know I'm a bass. Well, just from being in there, I started like trying to get by the basses, you know, and sing. But I noticed every time I'd get off, they would like get real close to me and like be loud, you know, like, okay, they're like listening to me.
The reason I gave you the Genesis 4 text was to remind the people that
you're no Jubal.
Our background, some in our background have suggested that stringed instruments are not allowed worshiping God. And I just read a text that says he
put it
Jubal
in there.
Was the father of all the ones of stringed instruments. You take that and you say, and once John the Revelator saw a vision, and he looked up and he saw the 24 elders, and all of them had a harp in their hand, which is the stringed instruments.
And I think that's Revelation 5.
And it was given to them by God. And I'm like,
I've never read
where stringed instruments were sinful. So I'm just looking at it saying God made people who are good at it, but don't ever make the mistake of playing them in front of me. That's what I'm not buying it.
Some of these people attach it to the actual building, which Acts 17 says God does not live in buildings built by hands. So they're like, look, you can go down the road and listen to it and sing with it, but once you go into the building, then all of a sudden something, I wouldn't say magical.
That's a man-made regulation.
Man-made regulation.
And just for our listeners, we come out of a acapella heritage, so that's why
this I love acapella.
We've discussed music. This ad nauseum for most of our lives. So that's if you don't come out of our heritage, you're like, what are they talking?
You know what got me on it is 1 Thessalonians 4. When Jesus comes back, it says God will blow a trumpet. Well, you know, if that's when we're going and he breaks out a trumpet, if somebody wants to break out a guitar and sing praises to God, I'm like,
This is a loud, big-time trumpet here.
Oh, I'm telling you.
Worldwide trumpet.
You'll remember
cosmos wide.
You'll remember this conversation when you hear the trumpet.
Yeah.
But I'll give you, it's duck season. The ducks have not come down here today. We got 2 mallard drakes, but it's not about the quantity, it's the quality, because they were 2 of the prettiest things I've ever seen. These 2 mallards, they were singles, but they came about an hour apart. I mean, you could tell they came from way up north, coming high. They see our little
there were dots
spread, yeah,
dots in the sky,
and their wings locked. The hair stood up on the back of my neck. We start calling lightly. Phil was doing most of the calling. We's hitting them on the corners, and they literally just came down into the spread. It was like you're so excited to shoot them, and then when you get up, you realize there's no chance he can get out of here.
But is this true that single drakes? Because a lot of times they will just come right into your duck hole. So is it kind of like duckharmony.com? Like they're single, they're looking, they don't have their mate.
It's right. Like me, a duck call is
because a group of ducks don't usually respond as well. Is that single drake, is it because he's looking for the hen?
He's looking for the hen.
I'm thinking it's duckmingle.com.
It will turn from where it is now. A lot of duck hunters don't realize that they're in the one of the best groups, a hot hole they've ever been on up through Arkansas and on up and then some great spots up there. We're on a spot that's not that great, but right. There are enough ducks that come down that it's a good spot, but it's not a great one. So I could hunt great spots every day if I wanted to.
So see,
but
it's close to the house.
It's like one of our hunting parties said yesterday, because this has been, I would say, the worst first split of a duck season ever, I do believe, numbers-wise.
Last year was about the same.
Yeah. Well, I did a little bit early. We're coming off the worst duck season in 20 years.
So one of our hunting party yesterday, your son-in-law, said, you know what I've realized? Because what we had 10, no, I think it was 7, 7 Sculp, which are, we call them blackjacks, and they're pretty far down the table fare. They came in. I mean, it sounded like an aircraft carrier was crashing in our decoys. Well, I assumed everybody heard that because it was just and then splash, splash, splash. So I stood up and I see 3 of them in the decoys. So I started counting 1, 2. And everybody knows in the blind, that means
we're fixing to shoot.
I'm fixed to shoot at 3. I didn't even say 3.
I'm down there doing something in the other end of the blind, and I just heard a countdown, which means somebody is trained on ducks and fixed to ground swat them.
That's an unwritten code.
All I heard was 1, 2. Well, we had already gotten to 2 in that long. 1, 2. Well, that didn't leave me with 1 more second. Well, they start shooting.
We've started the argument.
Look, there's their ringnecks, actually. The ringnecks, Jay said, Scop, all right, Scop. But they were sitting out there right in front of me, but I didn't know that. I didn't hear
them come in.
I just heard
problem.
A man giving the countdown. I said, well, they're ground swatting a teal or something. Over in the edge of the decoy is about 60 yards. Maybe they hope they get him. Well, I'm looking up where they're pointing their guns, and there's about 4 or 5 of these ringnecks sitting on my right at about 30 yards. But I didn't know that.
The ducks were on their side. I raise up, knocked down 2 of them. Well, Burley said he couldn't see for the brush.
Yep.
Jay was behind the blind taking a leak. Si was asleep on the bench. Mm-hmm. And Phil, he didn't hear, as well as he used to. And so when I was doing the countdown, I thought everybody had trained guns. No, I was the only one.
So you're thinking you got backup.
Well, it spawned a big argument. And then when Jay got back, he was like ripping us because he was like, that was pitiful. I mean, them ducks letting the decoys. And y'all get 2? What's wrong with y'all? And I was like, well, you wasn't even in a blind. You're part of this. I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm with some kids. Do you need to go to the bathroom, Johnny?
So now we're enjoying some more of our delicious Black Rifle coffee.
There's just something about, if you're going to call coffee, which we drink very strong coffee, but if you're going to call it Black Rifle in this neck of the woods, that just goes together.
I mean, it
coffee,
makes
rifles.
It makes you want to drink it, right?
Coffees and guns.
That's
yeah.
exactly right. Well, that's these guys. That's their story. These guys are veterans out in Colorado. They've come up with this small batch coffee, which is really, really good. They first sent us, when we first were, you know, doing ads for them, they sent us down some lighter roast, and we said, no, we need the darkest that you have, because we want the black rifle coffee, which is now
Think
what
about
they
it.
Sent.
Find strong black coffee and guns that shoot straight.
Right.
Well, what else do you want? as a man, what else would you want out of life?
That's exactly right. So we want to encourage you guys to try your Black Rifle coffee. The best way to do it is to join up with our Coffee of the Month Club. So basically, they're going to send you coffee every month, which is the way we get it. So you got a special thing going on in the month of December. They're going to give you some of their best bundles for you to try, which is fantastic. We love it. Like I said, it fits our whole what we're trying to do. Not only
perfect.
Great coffee, but obviously these are great guys to support. So we call it Freedom Filled Coffee. That's what they call it. So sign up for their Black Rifle Coffee Club. Check it out. Basically, you go to blackriflecoffee.com/fill. So /fill. And that's going to allow you to get a discount, 20% off your first order of any coffee products, including signing up for the coffee club. So we are highly pleased with our Black Rifle experience.
And may your aim always be true.
People were getting testy, Al. Yeah. Over five or six
ring necks. Yeah,
I said, boys, you don't want to let the argument flare up too much over ring necks.
But what Jay made a profound statement. He said, what I realize is it's not about how many ducks you kill. It's about ripping the guy next to you. And he's really right, because look, all this panic has set in because you're trying to do something to get ducks. Look, we said Phil was flaring all the ducks the other day by his beard. Look, so he comes out 2 days later looking like...
Everybody take a look at this. This was like this. Great. They used to call me the gray beard, but now my name has changed. Blackbeard.
He went through for 10 years he looked like Cypress Smalls.
See, here, let's make the comparison. There you go. That's an accurate
there you go.
Cover of your book.
We
there
thought that might be flaring the ducks because it got a little too white.
Yep.
It's this, like mine, I have speckles, but mine's still Cypress Mossy.
This here and brush and all, this stood out too much. And I thought, you know, and they kept saying, you know, you scared them. So I went with the black whiskers.
So you're not really trying to make a youth statement. It's more.
So everybody thought you might be trying to get back on the scene.
Yeah.
No.
Okay. He's old.
Miss Casey, well, you just want to stay younger with all them little girls that holler at you. I said, no, it's not that.
Well, besides, I think Mom may put a little coloring in her hair too. I mean, yeah. I'm just saying.
You know, it gets me. It's the Christmas season. We're talking about, you know, Jesus coming here, and most people when they think Christmas, they think, what am I going to get? You know, and I noticed a few weeks ago that Forever 21, a clothing company, because Phil, you've probably never even heard of it.
Forever 21, you do a lot of shopping there, don't
they? They sell clothes with one theme in mind. If you wear these clothes, you will forever be 21. Now, where did they get that concept?
I have no idea.
Well, guess what happened about 3 or 4 weeks ago? Forever 21 went bankrupt.
Uh-oh.
Well, yes, so much for that.
It's coming together for me now.
But my point is, so much of
so
it is
Forever
about,
21 is forever gone.
Forever gone. Yeah. And I was speaking somewhere. I was like, the only way you're going to be forever 21 is Jesus.
Yeah.
You better.
Well, this is truly dying the old whiskers dark so the ducks can't see you. That is precisely why I did that.
That's right.
You know, your ducks, they're pretty slick.
Well, and the paranoia sets in the more
you turn your head and your white beard, they see that. So up in the thicket. There's nothing that bright white except a crane sitting over there. Right. You might fool them and they think it's a crane in the bushes.
Well, for a while, it looked like moss hanging from a tree.
Yeah.
But it when it gets too white, they know it's
too
not
white.
Moss.
Well, all I know is the more we don't kill ducks, the more paranoid people get in a duck blind.
And I know everybody's touting the fact that there's no difference between males and females these days. Everybody did just, I'm 50 genders. I'm a cat, I'm a dog, I'm a human, I'm a male, I'm a female, and everybody's wondering what they are. But the bottom line is women never have to worry about lengthy whiskers on their face.
Most women.
A little peach fuzz, and they pop that. They pull that out, but they don't get to looking like this. No, not if they're female.
That's probably a true statement.
Well, yeah. If they do, they typically aren't. They don't connect very well.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you wind up in a carnival.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's the land of genders, and you decide. And I saw the other day the first man had a baby. I was like, no.
No,
it was touted as the first man has a baby. I was like, no, a man didn't have a baby.
No,
now, I don't know what we're calling what, but it wasn't. That doesn't work that way. But biology hasn't changed
in this internet age. Now it's all about the headline. You know, they'll put a headline up there, and then you start reading it, and it has nothing to do.
Right.
I mean, they just want you to stop, click, and read.
And really, you don't even have to read it. Just stop and click, and therefore you get the ads pop in front of you and then go on to the next headline.
And it don't even have to be true.
No, most of it's not true.
They're filled with every kind of wickedness, greed, just depravity.
So we're full-scale paranoid. Si was wanting to go yesterday. He wanted to move to a place that I've scouted. He hadn't been there. Si don't scout. He barely makes it to the blind, and he sits there. And if we're not killing ducks, he's like, we're in the wrong hole. I'm like, based on what? You're scouting? So Si wanted us all move yesterday to a place that I just scouted that's dry land.
Yeah.
I was like, Si, I'm not going hunting dry land.
We're deer hunting?
I'll put a hundo that if you go there, you will not kill a duck. And he's, but he never
but he
got off
it, though,
of
it.
Didn't he? Well, we've never had a bad hunt there. I'm like, Si, you hadn't been there since last year. Things have changed. But it's just, that's what happens when it's slow.
So we're waiting on the water. Our duck season is slow, but we have plenty to eat.
Yeah.
Duck wraps, duck and dressing. Mm-hmm. You say, well, y'all are killing plenty to eat for food supply.
Plenty.
So we're happy.
Yeah.
We are.
And look, those 2 milers today, majestic. It's all I need.
It's not the quantity, but the quality.
It is interesting that we're all getting older. I noticed the opening day, I looked around, I thought, there's only one man in our duck blind that's under 50.
Yeah.
And that's my son-in-law, Stone, and he ain't far behind. He's about 45. Yeah. So I thought, we're all getting older. But one of the good things about getting older is when you're younger, you're a little bit more – you want to kill everything all the time. You'll go chase. You'll crawl on your belly to get them. Now everybody's a little more into comfort. Like you said, you can work 2 ducks in a beautiful, watch it all happen and be satisfied. Just like
it's the challenge. I mean, if you're shooting ducks where there are no ducks, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
A lot of people would say, "Well, I noticed that I backed off out in the bushes, and I was watching people who build duck calls, but I noticed." They actually pick up their device that they build and been selling for 40 years.
40 plus.
But I noticed that when they call, it's very sparingly, and they wait till the duck gets in a precise spot out there before they'll go, gank, 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 3 or 4 little licks, and then they don't call anymore, and the duck just come right on in there.
Well, it's
most people make the mistake of calling way too much.
Well,
I'm a guy who came up with duck commander,
it would be in your marketing interest to say you need to be calling all the time.
Oh yeah,
but that doesn't work.
Listen, I got a high ball that'll ring. Look,
all we
do is a little bit on the side.
Yeah.
Just at the precise moment, their tail's towards you. We just go, gah, gah, gah. We kind of drag our first note, gah, 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 and we stop. And look, they'll just turn. They just come right in.
But think about why he's coming. Look, a single miler drake has broken off the herd. Why? Because this time of year, right before they go back north, they're looking for a woman.
Yeah, got to find a mate.
And so here he's by himself. So 99% of the time, that's what he's doing.
Right.
Why is he by himself? So when you call... there's a connection, especially if he locks his wings. I mean, it'd be like, just like you, you know, being at school or whatever, when you, before you got married and you say something to a girl, well, if she ignores you, guess what? You're out.
Yeah. But now it's an internet dating website. If, that's look, how they find each other now.
But if she starts talking to you, you're like, oh, see.
A Drake looking for a mate comes by. We let him come over a time or two. He gets his back toward us, so he doesn't have a real good reference point. Well, if he's looking for a mate, he's like, oh, my goodness.
She called because she saw it.
I hit the jackpot. Yeah.
He's like, oh, she noticed me.
Right.
So let me go take another look. Oh, she did it again. Yeah. She called again.
So when you're drawn to that sound, whether you're a duck or a human, you know, that kind of stuff, you know, running the wrong woman can get you killed.
Look, let's say, be wary.
But look, that's why what we'll do sometimes is if they won't come in, they circle six times. Well, then after a field call, I'll call behind there because then he's like, oh, now I got two of them interested.
Yeah.
I got to get in there now.
Competition. Yeah.
Same thing as humans.
There you go.
Duck of course, there's a lot of them who look down, they won't matter, they think, something ain't right about that setup. I think I see something moving in the brush over there. You know,
well, that's the same thing with human beings.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
You got a couple women talking to you late at night.
Something not right about it.
I'm not sure that sexy Lexi is who I think she is. Right. Maybe there's some old guy in the basement.
A lot of them fire up in there and they take off the other way and you're like, wait a minute, who moved? What happened? But they're looking. These ducks
danger, are. Danger.
One mistake and you're in a pot.
That's right. There are a lot of. I never realized.
Same as life.
Same as life.
One mistake and you. What is that Proverbs 7 that said, stay away from the adulteress because her way is the highway to hell.
Yeah.
All right. So, Dad, this is the Quip toothbrush.
I tried that last night.
Yeah, so tell us what your experience. This is brand new. This is hot off the presses. Dad tried his first
I'm
electric 73 toothbrush.
Years old, and I had never owned an electric toothbrush. Never tried one, but on a whim, I said, you know what? This thing, that might work pretty good. You know, so I said, I'd like to have one of those. So I ordered one. And I tried it out last night. I would say, as far as toothbrushes go, I don't know how in the world you'd ever beat that thing. I mean, well, that will brush your teeth.
Basically, what happens is these guys have figured out that the electric toothbrush can do a lot more than you can just working in that same area.
No doubt about it.
So you're getting a lot more coverage. You're getting a lot deeper and get a lot of the stuff out of there. And I'd say, Dad, with you, that's probably a good thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a very good thing. Yeah, I tried it last night. I said, in this case, what is this that came in this bag? I said, that's my new toothbrush. Don't be messing with that.
So Dad is a happy and pleased customer.
No doubt about it. With
the Quip toothbrush. And so, look, it's Christmas season. It's great to be able to get for somebody to give them a shot, maybe try it out. It's a great gift. It's a practical gift. Everybody needs a toothbrush. Why not get an electric one that works? The sonic vibrations, it's got a little timer in it that's every 30 seconds. Basically, it lets you know. Could you feel the little shift in there when it's time to?
I thought it was just getting another gear or doing something.
Basically, so you thought you were ramping up as you went along?
I thought it was ramping up. I said, you know, I was just, you know, I never tried one.
I should have probably explained
there it. There was a certain pauses in there. I'm thinking, well, that's all.
Well, that meant working on a different part of your.
Might have been.
You know, it's just the idea is 30 seconds you work on the outside.
You know, I was just getting used to it's already moving.
That's right. You were trying to move it the same time.
For 73 years, if you're doing this, you tend to want to do this instead of saying, wait a minute. This thing's already doing that. I just need to hold on to it.
Well, here's the beauty of it, Dad. So now that you've started, use it every day. They're basically going to deliver by mail. You get some new brush heads, some new floss and toothpaste.
Got a little floss that comes out of it.
Yeah.
I haven't tried that yet.
Right. Well, there you go. Flossing is next for Phil. There's no telling what's going to happen when he finally gets all the discoveries. They'll send it to you every 3 months. That way you keep some fresh stuff going along. 3 million customers so far. So obviously it works. So think about it for the Christmas season or try it yourself. GetQuip.com/Robertson. GetQuip.com/Robertson. It's going to save you on your gift sets, on your first, you get a first refill for free if you use that /Robertson. So check it out. GetQuip.com/Robertson. Join Phil for the first time in 73 years.
I hereby officially endorse that particular product.
There you
That'll
go.
That'll work.
Check it out. Quip.
That's Proverbs 7.
Her slain are a mighty throng.
Yeah,
it's always. I noticed in Ecclesiastes, it's talking about women who seduce men. But these days in America, it's always the men who are after the women. I haven't heard anyone say that women ever make the mistake of seducing men. Not once have I heard that. You reckon that's ever happened? A woman seduced a man and brought him down?
I think it's a good possibility.
I've had a few women come up and make some gestures, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, you were being sarcastic. Okay.
All right, where are we today, Al?
Well, I guess this is a perfect segue because we're talking about why we need Jesus,
yep.
Which is perfect for the end of that discussion. But we talked about last time the idea that as we were looking from the Old Testament forward, that Jesus was predicted.
What all these prophecies? I wonder what is the number on the prophecy?
Oh, it's hundreds of prophecies, and you know a prophecy was in time, real time as to whatever was being going on in the Old Testament. But then we would see them pointing forward. You get these little glimpses. So I could see where people would miss it in their day, but we have the hindsight of being able to look back. And one of those we talked about was that you know, out of all the kings that were there was just a handful of them that actually had a heart for God. One of them was David. And God told him something interesting in 2 Samuel 7:16. He said, your house, talking about David, and your kingdom will endure forever before me. Your throne will be established forever. So he was, you know, and you can imagine David's hearing this coming from God. And this is at the end, you know, He's hearing this and he's thinking, I'm sure he's thinking physical, you know, but it's just going to go.
Sure.
But of course, what God was relaying was something that would happen through his lineage, which would be Christ.
Well, and if I just happened to be there in Luke 1, when Mary had this conversation with the angel, I think it's Luke 1:29. Mary was greatly troubled at his words, the angel, because it said, you know, the angel said, greetings, you have found favor with the Lord. You know, and well, you have an angel tell you that. She's like, uh-oh. But the angel said to her, do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will be with child and give birth to a son, and you are to give him the name Jesus. He will be great and will be called the Son of the Most High. The Lord God will give him the throne of his father David, which was the prophecy.
Yep, right.
And then it says, and he will reign over the house of Jacob forever. And then it says, his kingdom will never end. Which is what we brought up in a previous podcast about this prediction
Daniel
of the kingdom.
Yeah.
Well, here's the king. Here's the kingdom. Here's from the line of David, which would have been a fulfillment of a lot of prophecy.
Well, in two different gospels deals with the lineage coming, you know, all the way down the pike. And it's interesting because the one in Matthew 1, you follow it down, the lineage, and you see it comes to Joseph, who was the earthly father of Jesus, but wasn't engaged in him. You know, he wasn't physically, biologically his father because she was a virgin, right? But, and yet God still made sure that lineage went through David. So you go back and you look over in Luke 3, and there's another lineage there. A lot of the same names you recognize, but guess what? When it gets to David, it forks and it's a different son, but then it goes all the way to Mary. So God was making sure we all knew that this lineage was going to come through David, and it was two different sons. They fork off there, but it still winds up with Mary and Joseph, which is really interesting that God
just tracked
it
all the way from Genesis to about 500 or 600 B.C., and then you just have to go with kind of secular history from there on into when Jesus actually showed up. But the lineage is there, the seed line.
Do you know what I found interesting, too? I was reading this morning for you.
Matt Owens and I looked at that.
But it wasn't that just God just said, okay, I'm going to come through a virgin. You know, it was like other circumstances around. You had Zechariah and Elizabeth, who he prepared the way that he is the author of the womb. Because here was Elizabeth who couldn't have kids. And all of a sudden, it's
and
like
she and Mary are related; they're cousins. Yeah.
And I think he did that, which would produce John the Baptist, as a way to realize, okay, because it's so unbelievable to believe, especially if you're a virgin. I mean, what? it's like almost impossible. So
that's why people who don't believe in God scoff at it.
All right.
It's too outlandish for them to say.
But if you read the story, it's really inspiring, because that happens right before, because John the Baptist prepared the way. Well, he came here uniquely too, from a barren woman, which is what didn't seem possible. And what I always found funny about the story is Zechariah, since he didn't believe it was going to happen, you know, he has an encounter with God.
He was a priest, yeah.
And he said, I don't believe it. So the Lord made him where he couldn't speak after he told him. And he came out doing sign language, trying to tell people that God was going to give him a son, which is, you know, I thought, man, if I had that power, because Si's the worst one. I mean, you know, I tell him we're going to go do something about the duck. We're going to go here. When he never believes it. Well, then it happens, and all of a sudden it was his idea. But I thought, you know what I really need in that situation is that. I just don't want to hear anything he has to say
if you could just
until
silence
he sees it. Because then he saw it, and it said his tongue was loosed. And then he was
able to say,
okay, I was wrong. I hope that was the first thing he said. But when I read that, it meant a lot more to think, well, you know, it kind of makes sense that the one that prepared the way came in a way where Mary could say, okay, this is doable. I mean, I know it sounds crazy. And you brought up that impossible in that section. One of my favorite verses is Luke 1:37, right after he said, this has happened. He'll be the son, you know, a great one from the Most High. It says, for nothing is impossible with God. Luke 1:37.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit fearlessarmyrollcall.com to secure your spot.
Because Elizabeth, you know, verse 36 says, even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. And she who was said to be barren is in her sixth month. So she was 6 months ahead. But it said, for nothing is impossible with God. That was the principle he was trying to get them all to see. Even Jesus coming from a virgin, God, earth.
But even think about the practical of what that did for Mary. We talked about this last time. She's like a lot of young women today, except that the way she got pregnant was different. And she knew that, and her husband knew that, Joseph, her betrothed, but nobody else knew that. So she had that pressure, you know, as her belly begins to grow, everybody's looking at her like, you know.
And Joseph is hedging a little bit.
He's hedging, and somebody's like, yeah, give me the virgin birth thing. So she doesn't have anywhere to go where anybody can, you know, will say anything other than, yeah, we heard the story, except for Elizabeth. So she packs up, like a lot of young women do when they're in trouble, because, you know, they're ashamed, and she goes off to find somebody to talk to. It just so happens that it's the person who God has wrought his own miracle for her to become pregnant. And you remember when she walks in and she first sees Elizabeth.
What were they, about 6 months apart?
6 months apart in terms of
John the
being
Baptist,
pregnant.
Then Jesus.
So
and he was the forerunner.
So remember what she said when she comes and first speaks to Elizabeth? She said, the baby in my womb just leapt for joy.
Yeah.
When you mention about what happened.
I've always liked
that. I mean, that was incredible.
Because people, there's a group of people in our world who don't believe their babies once if they're inside their mother's womb, you know. But he even knew at that moment through, because it was God's providence, but
Somehow the presence of Jesus impacted John the Baptist in
the womb.
That therefore encouraged the moms. I mean,
it's a powerful moment. It's a super powerful because moment. Really it comes down to whether you're in the womb or outside of it. It comes down to where is the baby coming from? I mean, that is the question.
Well, and you know, Lisa and I do a lot of work on behalf of the pro-life movement in the country. I mean, and part of the reason why is because Lisa had an abortion when she was 16 because she was faced with, it wasn't my child, but it was in between us dating. But she was forced into that thought process because the world says it's not really a baby. And her own parents believed the lie and said, you know what, it's better for you to just go. It's not really a baby anyway. It's just a blob of tissue. And so she went and aborted her baby, something that she's regretted for the last almost now 40 years. Even though we got together, obviously we had children. So we tell that story to people. We're just like, look, when you're pregnant, you obviously, you know, whether you're married or unmarried, there's now a child growing inside of you that it matters. It matters in the world. Who knows what's going to happen with this life?
That's designed by God.
Designed by God.
Put here for a purpose.
And when you think about it, when you abort a baby, you're not just aborting one life, but you're aborting a generation of lives that would come from that life.
Mary could have easily have done back then what women do now.
Exactly.
Well, they're all saying that, you know, I'm not married, so I'm pregnant here, and I know what they're going to think. Right. So the best thing to do, just get rid of this. So Jesus probably would have been a victim of abortion, very possible.
That's a great point. I never thought about that. Well, what if that Mary time, had aborted the Savior of the world?
Well, at that I'm time, saying. The king was, they were killing all the babies. I mean, you you see that even in history. That was kind of their way. If any prophecy,
they've been killing babies for a long, long time.
Well, they'd get wind of a prophecy, these kings. Well, they start killing all the babies.
It happened with Moses, remember?
Yeah. Yep.
Because he, you know, they were fearful of the Hebrews, so they told the midwives, you know, you kill the boys and let the girls live.
Well, I couldn't remember this in Jesus' story. Was it before they were born or after?
No, it was after. Yeah. It was up to 2 years old because he got the prophecy later. You know, you remember the Magi stopped and visited King Herod on their way to find Jesus. Mm-hmm. So when they shared with him what they were doing, all of a sudden he starts getting nervous. He's like, wait a minute. The king, again, he's thinking physical kingdom. He's thinking somebody
he's thinking competition.
That is true. As much as we're negative about our world, I mean, we got the ruler of their kingdom in that day saying, let's go kill all 2-year-old babies.
Yeah. And it happened. I mean, after that, he thought, well, all right, so once it happened, then he thought, wait a minute, I trace this back. It's been within the last 2 years when those guys were here. So let's just kill every 2-year-old male in Israel. And the edict went down. How many, you know, and there's a verse that says the weeping and the crying reached the father. I think it's in, where was it? Oh, it's in Hosea 11:1, Jeremiah 31. Those are the prophecies. And then you get to Matthew 2 and it tells the story.
I'm sitting here talking to you two boys, my sons, and y'all, we begat myself and your mother. And I'm just thinking, what if we had just said, no, let's kill them? We wouldn't be having this conversation
right
now.
Right.
I mean, you just think about what a loss that would have been.
Well, that's part of our story, Dad. When Mom is with us, you know, Lisa made a decision at 16. Mom was 16.
Yep.
When she got pregnant with me. And so even though you and her probably never talked about that, it's somewhere in the mind that's always an option, even 10 years before Roe v. Wade.
Yep.
But
it
she
never came up with
that's
her.
What she said. She said, you know, the way she was raised, she knew that even if you said, you know what, that's too much pressure for me because you had just signed to play at Tech. You know, she said, I would just live with my grandmother and I'd have just raised you, you know, on my own if Phil would have said no.
Yeah, that never came
So that up. Was her mindset. But I mean, so people need to know that.
I would have said, are you nuts?
Yeah, it was, you were raised differently. Yeah. That was murder.
I thought about Tim Tebow, you know, I think their situation was a medical condition where they recommended that she abort her baby, Tim Tebow's mom. And she's like, you know what? No. I mean, I'm praying. I'm going with the power of God. I'm just not doing it. Well, and guess who came out? Tim Tebow.
That's right.
I mean, anybody who knows him, he's one of the most inspirational, positive people that helps so many people that can't help themselves. It's incredible. You
know? So God did all this to get Jesus here. And it's interesting because the Bible in Luke 1 and 2 and Matthew 1 and 2, 3, you see where all this kind of lays out. There was a lot of miraculous things that happened to get him here. Then he gets here, and really the Bible just kind of goes dark about Jesus's growing up for 30 years. You see a little glimpse here. One time he was 12.
Isaiah,
says he grew in strength, and you know, and the 12, when he was 12, he was missing for three. You know,
they went to the Passover, and he got left behind.
Yeah, Isaiah makes a strange statement. This is 712 years before the baby was in Mary's womb, the birth of Jesus. Who has believed our message, Isaiah 53? And to whom has the arm of the Lord been revealed? He's talking about Jesus. Watch. He grew up before him, Jesus did, before his father, like a tender shoot. What does it mean, Al? And like a root out of dry ground. No beauty, no majesty to attract us, nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. So,
ordinary.
A root out of dry ground is you're in the middle of Death Valley, and you look out there in the middle of the thing, and you see a little green shoot sticking up out of all that dry, and you're like, whoa, where in the world did that come? A root out of dry ground, meaning he just didn't fit.
Yeah. And he was on purpose ordinary, not extraordinary. Nothing about his physical appearance, nothing about the way he handled himself. Because again, remember we've talked about
pictures you see, that's kind of been, you can tell.
He didn't look like a Middle Eastern guy.
This is no beauty or majesty to attract us to him. If you turned it around and just take that for what it says, he wasn't much to look at.
Yeah.
He didn't stand out among men like tall, handsome, and physique. And nope.
You notice even the Hollywood.
In fact, Al, right after that, he was despised and rejected by men, a man of sorrows, familiar with suffering. And here's what I've always thought. What does it mean? Like one from whom men hide their faces, he was despised, and we esteemed him not. Now, if you hide your face from somebody when you see him coming, you see him, and you're like, oh, and you turn your head. You can't look at him. That's what Isaiah said he would be like.
Right.
That is pretty amazing.
The Bible says, you brought up Hollywood, which is a great characteristic. All the movies they made about Jesus, he always looks the same. He acts different because he can't be human. He's got to act subhuman. And he, he's beautiful looking.
Beautiful. It's like a androgynous looking, and yet at the same time, piercing. Like, you know what I'm saying? They always do it like it was their image, but it's not a biblical image.
But when you read the Bible, it's not practical. You remember when he came to Nathaniel, and first he said he did something miraculous. He's like, hey, you remember when you were under that tree in a field thinking about, the stairway to heaven? I saw you there. I knew what you were thinking. I mean, does it exactly say that? But that was the impression he gave. But then he's like, well, aren't you from Nazareth? Well, you can't be a man of God. Nothing good. Once he saw him and said, where are you from? I mean, that'd be like us, some of our parts of town here.
You're from Ward 9?
Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. You're from Ward 9. You can't
Which, by the way,
if he said, I'm from Balcomville, you're like, Balcomville.
Balcomville. Whoa. No, he's out.
So, by the way, let's talk about that because everybody, all the Pharisees, they kept saying that. Can any good thing come from Nazareth? This was a section of Israel. Everybody was like, ugh. It was in the north. It's close to Samaria. We talked about the split kingdom. But it's interesting. They had no idea that he was born in Bethlehem. He shouldn't have been. The only reason he wound up there is because there was a census, remember. And so Joseph and Mary had to go down there because that's where they were. They had to register where you're from. So they go down. She wasn't planning to have the baby there, and yet she does. But what they didn't realize that all these circumstances were happening because in the Old Testament, that Bethlehem birth back to the city of David, that's where David's from, by the way, would
prophecy had to be fulfilled.
So it's funny, all this abuse, and Jesus never corrects them. He never says, well, I wasn't born in Nazareth. He just takes the abuse, and yet he wasn't. It'd be like us saying, It'd be like you meet you and I, Jay, saying we're from West Monroe. If somebody asked you where you're from, you'd say West Monroe, right?
Yeah.
So, but you're not really, you weren't born in West Monroe. You were born in Ruston. So was I. But nobody would ever know that because we grew up here. And that's exactly what happened with Jesus. He was from Nazareth because that's where we grew up. He was actually born in Bethlehem, which fulfilled the prophecy. But the Pharisees didn't know that.
They still don't believe. I mean, you know, when I went to Israel 2 years ago, we had a church service in Bethlehem that's now Muslim, Islam controlled.
Really?
And here, oh, yeah. And here we go, and the guy gets up and preaches. You know, we had a Saturday service because they moved their times around. And that the building where we were at, it had been bombed 14 times. And the man that was preaching had been shot 5 times in the chest. His brother was killed with axes and knives. His son had been kidnapped. We had water, buckets of water down the aisles because they say if they throw some kind of fire cocktail in here, because I leaned over and said, what's the buckets of water all about? And at first I have to admit, I was a little fearful because I thought, could this be number 15? Because once we crossed that wall and went into Bethlehem from Israel into the Palestine, which is they controlled Bethlehem, the whole mood changed. I never saw a woman. The men that looked at me like, I want to hurt you. It just had a different vibe. And now we're going to pull up and start singing and have a guy preach Jesus, one of the greatest sermons I've ever heard about Jesus. But he was still saying the same things we're talking about. Oh, he was here. He was born here, and he's coming back here, and we're leaving here. And as he talked, you know, I thought, this is what we should be believing. This guy, he's not backing off, and he deems their threats as God is with me. The reason they quit attempting to kill his life is the last 2 times they thought he was dead, and he wasn't. Well, it spooked them because they thought, well, maybe there is something to this.
Maybe God's keeping this guy
alive. They shot the man 5 times. He was walked out of the church building. They did a drive-by, and he took 5 bullets in the chest and lived.
And still preaching.
And when he got out of the hospital, guess what? He went back and started preaching again. He told a funny story about, he said, you know, the one thing that upset me, not the getting shot, not my son getting kidnapped, not even my brother dying, because I know where he's at. I know he'll be back. He said, but what they did to shut him up is they would pull up with loudspeakers in the back of their trucks while he was trying to do service. They quit threatening his life because they were scared of him. But you couldn't hear him over the speakers that they were, you know, spewing their whatever their theology was. And he said, nobody could hear what I was saying. They were drowning him out. So he said, I wrestled day and night, and I was thinking, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And I was crying out to the Lord. And he said, and then the Lord said, which everybody kind of stopped, like, is he saying the Lord spoke to him, you know? And he said, buy bigger speakers. And so he said, I have speakers. And you could see them. They're mounted, pointed in every direction, and they go up to 5 miles.
So you're not going to drown him out.
You're not drowning him out. And he said, if they bomb him, I'll buy some more.
That's funny. Because we were in New York at a pro-life rally that was right in the middle of Times Square. We've all been in Times Square. You know how crazy that is, the gyrating screens.
That's the word that came to my mind.
Yeah, Dad said, everywhere I look is gyrating giant humans. And so we were in the middle of that thing. Same thing, Dad. I'd say there were 20,000 pro-life, the largest pro-life rally ever in the state of New York. And I was a part of it. And there was probably about 1,000 protesters kind of off to the side because it's just right in the middle. I mean, it's just a mecca of activity. But I noticed the people at Fogo's are pretty smart because they had brought drums. The protesters, they had drums and musical thing. You know, they were going to drown out the message, kind of what Jason's describing. But they brought in some major, major sound. And so, like, the whole thing was going on. There was worship, and people were speaking. And you could just way off, you heard a boom, boom, boom. Just like a little small noise off in the distance, you know. But get bigger speakers. I mean, that's exact. Sometimes that's pretty good.
I was so inspired when I cut him a big check on the spot. Because I said, I'll support that. I mean, this guy's risking his life every day.
Oh, I'm telling
you. And he said, I said, well, how many members do you have here? And he said, about 300, but they come, you know, we never do anything at the same time. But, you know, they rotate the schedule that because they don't want to get them all hemmed up in one place. And they'll just
you don't get complacent.
Well, they don't want to get bombed while they're all together at one time. So, and he said, everyone's real poor at our church. And he said, it's not what you think. He said, because they've been blackballed from this community. They won't, you can't get a job because they believe in Jesus. So not only are they going to persecute you, if you follow Jesus in that country, in that region, in Bethlehem, modern day Bethlehem, nobody's going to hire you. So they just try to get every, you're talking about persecution. You wake up every morning, somebody's trying to kill you, and they don't want to give you any money. But he said, you know, I feel like this is my place. I was like, well, you're at the cutting edge of spiritual warfare here. Uh-huh. And when I got back, it made me feel a lot more bold because around here, somebody might insult you. Well, but that's about as far as it goes, you know.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, social media insults, really? That, I mean, when you think about it in terms of persecution, that's what we'll say. Well, they're speaking bad about me compared to that guy.
I pay no matter.
I mean, that's just flowing off.
I pay no attention to it.
No,
but you know what? I'm going to say this. You know, we've kind of referenced Luke 1, Luke 2, and Luke 3, and you see all these miracles that happen, you know, barren women having children, virgin woman having the, you know, Jesus. But in all those situations, it became about Jesus, who he was, than how it all happened. And I think that's an important point. It's like even with that guy in Bethlehem, a lot of things that have happened to him seems borderline miraculous. He don't talk about that. I mean, he didn't talk. I found out later he'd been shot 5 times and had been bombed.
He didn't tell you that.
He didn't tell me that. He got up there and said, I want to introduce someone to you. And he knew we were kind of a church group. Most of us were church people. But he acted like we had never been introduced to Jesus. And I think that's the same concept. It's like that one little phrase that I read in Luke 1 when it said, well, nothing's impossible for you because you have the miracle worker. This is the creator. It's not just a good fella. It's not just someone's going to help you out. He's a miracle worker. That's not a problem. And so that's why I think you can justify all these guys living and then dying violent deaths because really, it's not really a problem. You know, and it wasn't a problem
for the
Bethlehem preacher.
It's like we talked about last time, Peter, who we used for our example, he went from a guy that was just focused on what he thought he should get to a guy who just would do anything for Christ. And that's what you saw at the end of his life, which is powerful. So obviously the reason we've been talking about this is we're in the Christmas season, as they say, but it's important to remember what's most important about what we're talking about. And the birth of Jesus, really, it's fascinating, as we talked about today, but it's really only fascinating that it leads to the life of Jesus, the death of Jesus and the resurrection of Jesus, and obviously everything that goes along with that. So next time we'll flesh that out a little bit more and kind of get into why he came. And also, more importantly, I think for us, is he coming back? Because that's what we're all looking forward to. So appreciate you guys as always. Merry Christmas to all of you. Remember what's most important about the Christmas season. We are so glad you're watching and listening to the Unashamed podcast. Be sure to like us on Facebook, subscribe on YouTube and iTunes. That's going to keep you up to date with all the new episodes, and it's also going to let other people find out about our podcast. So keep spreading the word and watching and listening to Unashamed with Phil Robertson.